Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com. Hey everybody, welcome to this new episode of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. As always, I'm joined by my partner, Dr. Kurt Strecker. I'm Coach Al. Hope you're having a great day. We're having a super day here in the lab. Doc, how are you today?
I'm fabulous. It's a sunny day in Old Saybrook, Connecticut. It's about 11 degrees. Coach just got back in from his run. He's all bright of eye and bushy of tail. We're all ready to go here.
Wow, it was a little tough running into the wind, I gotta say.
It was really tough running the wind today.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those classic days where you follow that old farmer's tale of it's a lot smarter to run into the wind going out. Yeah, so you got it on the way back. Every runner out there is listening to that thinking, yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. Right,
you don't have to do that too many times, run with the wind going out. It's not so bad.
That's exactly right.
You turn around and, you know, it's brutal coming back. It was not so much fun.
I figured there'd be all ice this morning. I walked out the front door and didn't slip and thought, oh crap, now I have to run. Right on. So speaking of running, Coach, today we've had some questions. We have people coming to the lab all the time and people hitting up online and talking about heart rate training. You know, gee, I got to get my heart rate monitor and use my heart rate training in terms of my overall training plan, and there's a lot of discussion about that, and differing opinions. And can you talk a little bit about? First of all, there's a number of ways to calculate, you know, this max heart rate, in quotes, you know, this theoretical max heart rate, and some are better than others. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, thanks, Doc. I mean, I think discussing heart rate training and how to utilize heart rate is a good tool to assess how hard you're working is really an interesting topic. You know, first I want to say measuring heart rate as a gauge of intensity can actually be a good place for a novice to begin in terms of their training programs. You know, very often when folks first get started in training, they're seeking some kind of feedback, something that tells them that they're doing something right or doing something wrong. And so very often the first place they go is a heart rate monitor. So I'll throw out this idea first that that's not necessarily a bad place to go. But like any tool, we've got to understand what its limitations are and what it really can do for us, you know? And it's one of many tools that we can use as athletes to assess, first of all, how hard we're working, whether or not that intensity is appropriate, and also how we're adapting over time. So you mentioned maximum heart rate. Now that's an interesting thing because, like, you know, you've been in this field for a while, as have I, and we hear this term maximum heart rate thrown around all the time. And in particular, we hear it in reference to charts that are readily available for practitioners, for coaches, for athletes. Very often the charts say 220 minus your age is X or Y in terms of intensity. But in truth, as you know, and this is the first thing I want to throw out there, is that maximum heart rate is not universal for each of us. And in fact, every person has a maximum heart rate that is unique to them. I think, obviously, I said sort of the same thing, but a couple of different ways. The bottom line is not everybody has a maximum of 220. And I always, whenever I discuss this topic, I think back to a cyclist who was dominant at one time at the Tour de France, Miguel Indurain, who was known to have had a maximum heart rate of only 160. And I say only in quotations because what that means essentially is that Miguel was an individual with a lower, perhaps average maximum than a typical person. And what that resulted in is, of course, his training zones would be lower comparatively, and his resting heart rate would also be lower comparatively. And of course, with a relative maximum of around 160 beats per minute, you can imagine a highly trained endurance athlete like him, a resting, you know, heart rate wouldn't be uncommon for him to see, you know, in the mid-20s.
42.
Yeah, or even low.
20, yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, very, very sure. low. You know, interestingly, another person sitting next to Miguel on the bus in London, as an example, or any place around the world, that person might have a maximum of 210.
Right.
Right? And so when someone who isn't doesn't necessarily understand how these things work hears that, their first inclination is often to think, well, that other person is more fit than Miguel.
Right, sure.
Or has more ability than Miguel. And that's not true at all.
Sure.
So just throwing that out there, you know, maximum heart rate is largely genetically determined.
Yep.
And it is not 220 for everybody. It can be lower than 220. It might be higher than 220, although that would be very unusual, right? And for the most part, the last thing I'll say about maximum is it, because it is genetically determined and because it's very variable, one other thing I'll say is that it's not necessarily an important number from the standpoint of establishing training zones based on heart rate. The more important number is lactate threshold or functional threshold, which we'll talk about in a moment, which is a percentage of maximum. In most exercise physiology textbooks, you'll read that lactate threshold occurs at around 88 to 92% of maximum heart rate, although that isn't universal for every single person either. But that's the more important number to know. So I guess the last thing I'll say about maximum is it's not that important, and it's probably not all that smart to try to figure out
right,
what it
right,
is.
Right, right.
Because to find your maximum heart rate, you'd really have to go about as hard as you possibly could for a sustained period of time. That isn't necessarily the smartest thing to do, at least on any kind of a routine basis.
Right.
And as I said, it's not that important a number anyway.
It's interesting you say that, because you've been in, you know, certainly in situations where you're on a group ride or a group run and say, hey, what's your heart rate right now?
Right.
And the answer usually is, well, how does that affect you?
Right, exactly.
What's the matter?
It doesn't matter at all.
Mine and yours are two different animals.
Very, 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 very right? different animals. Yeah, I mean,
sure.
I could, if I had a maximum of 200 and you had a maximum of 160 like Miguel, then we could be riding along and you could be less fit than me, yet show a much lower
right.
heart rate than me. And at the end of the day, what we've got, if we don't understand those numbers, is a lot of confusion
right.
and misunderstanding about our fitness level and also about how hard we're going at any moment in time.
Right.
So bottom line is maximum is of little importance.
So you mentioned that it can be a good tool for you know, the beginner, right? The person who's getting off the couch, because it gives them some feedback. But maybe less important as people become more and more trained or more savvy about their training.
Right. I think that's true, because in the beginning, a novice is looking for any kind of a tool to help them assess where they're at. You know, it's sort of like, you know, as a coach, I often get asked by novices, so tell me how hard I should go. Tell me what I should do. Tell me what I should be thinking about. You know, novices are grasping for those feedback mechanisms that help them to assess their progress. And heart rate can be a good place to begin or start, certainly, because it's a relatively easy thing to assess and understand with a basic heart rate monitor and some basic metrics, if you will, or, you know, some things to utilize to understand how it's important. As an athlete becomes more experienced, what they often find is that for the most part, while their speed may change, their power output may change if they're a cyclist, their heart rate relative to effort pretty much doesn't, because that maximum number really doesn't change for the most part. It's the same whether you're 25 or 35 or 45. By the time you're 55 like me, you may have a hard time reaching that number, right? And certainly the physiologists in our group here will tell us that we'll tend to lose a little bit of that maximum over time for a variety of things having to do with elasticity of the heart muscle, blah, 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 from aging. But the bottom line is, for the most part, it can be a good basic tool for beginners and is probably less important for more advanced athletes. Although there are ways we can utilize it, and we'll talk about that in a second, I bet.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask you, Coach. You know, how would you use this, and what are some other good ways? Obviously, this is one measure of work that you're doing. What are some other ways that you would, you know, put those things together and describe?
Right. Well, let me while we're on the topic, let me first throw out this another sort of what I think of as a basic concept with respect to heart rate training, and that is that if we're going to use it as a tool, it is more appropriate for steady state aerobic efforts than it is for higher intensity efforts. Now the reason for that is very simple. Heart rate is a reflection of work in the body. It's a reflection of what's happening in the body. It's not a measurement of that. So Doc, let's say as an example, we went out to the track and you and I, we were gonna run the straights as hard as we could and then jog the turns around the track. And what would happen if we did 10 of those in a row is our heart rate would gradually rise as the recoveries are very short and the overall residual effect of that workout was building. But when we were jogging those turns, our heart rate wouldn't automatically drop to reflect the fact that we were running very, very slowly.
Right, so you're describing a lag.
Exactly.
That time,
that's
right?
Exactly right. Yeah. So that lag, that means basically that the numbers we're getting from our monitor are really meaningless in terms of assessing what we're actually doing,
right,
which is how fast we're running and how much we're recovering, relatively speaking. However, if we decided instead of going to the track and doing that we were just going to go out for an aerobic run for say 45 minutes, mm-hmm, up to a couple of hours, right? We do a gradual warm-up, we settle in at a steady state intensity. At that point, our heart rate monitor would be a better tool to assess how hard we're actually moving and working, not how hard we're moving, but how hard we're working because of the more steady state aspect of that run.
Right.
So here's one way in which we can use heart rate, and this would be sort of a general practical tip for every one of our listeners, and I think particularly for the novices or athletes that are just getting in or thinking about using heart rate as a tool. And this is generally what I tell every athlete I work with. Once you've got that heart rate monitor, rather than try to figure out what your zones are, just wear it for a while and go out and train as normal. So you go out for a 30 to 45 minute run. Find that steady state intensity where you're able to breathe predominantly through your nose, you're not gasping for air a lot, you're at a comfortable intensity where you could talk, but maybe talking isn't easy, right? But you could if you needed to. Glance down at your heart rate monitor. What's the number that it's given you? If you do that repeatedly for a couple of weeks, you're going to find that at that intensity, you start to find a number which shows up pretty consistently, or a range that shows up consistently. That is most likely going to be right around the middle of your aerobic zone, or maybe the upper end of your aerobic zone. And from that point, you've got what we refer to as that zone two. You got a number that really works for that. From that number, and let's just say for argument's sake that number turns out to be 140 beats per minute. From there, you could add 20 beats from 140 to 160. And that 160 beats per minute is very likely a good approximation of your lactate threshold. And then from 160 to 180, add another 20 beats. Now you've got a 20 beat range with which to work in if you wanted to have a good, again, approximation of lactate threshold. So just from that one practical experience of a couple of weeks of just glancing down at where you're at a steady intensity, you can determine a general range for both zone two or aerobic, and also what is very likely around your lactate threshold. Again, as a general rule, lactate threshold, we don't want to get into physiology right now,
sure,
but as a general rule, it's equal to about 1 hour best effort. For a runner, it's somewhere around 10K to 10 mile race pace or race intensity, and it equals about 88 to 92% of maximum effort. That's a good intensity for every athlete to train around to lift your fitness. You get the most bang from your buck by hanging around at that intensity that's about 90% of effort, because it's hard enough to elicit some adaptations physiologically, yet it's not an absolute all-out effort that would cause you to fatigue quickly and therefore prevent you from doing a fairly large volume of training at that intensity.
So there you're able to take sort of the RPE scale, you know, that perceived exertion, and combine that with, you know, your heart rate monitor to put the pieces together to be able to create a real practical application of these tools.
Yeah, that's a great point. Ultimately, the smartest athlete is the athlete that utilizes all of the tools that they've got available to them, right? That rating of perceived exertion that you mentioned, heart rate perhaps. If you're on the bike, of course, your power meter, right? Because that's giving you a more objective measure. If you're in the pool, you've got that clock on the wall, which is telling you how fast you're going. And of course, while you're running, you've got pace and or speed as well. These are all tools that we can use, and ultimately they're like tools in a toolbox. The more tools you have in your toolbox, the better mechanic you're going to be in terms of being able to assess on any given day how hard you're going.
Right.
You know, the key thing to remember is that heart rate is not a be-all end-all to follow. And you don't necessarily win if your heart rate's higher.
Right.
And if it is higher, that may be an indication that something is amiss. And similarly, if it's lower, it also may be an indication that something is amiss. But the bottom line is it's a reflection of what's going on in your body. It's impacted by your stress level, how much you've slept, what may be going on at any particular moment in time, whether you were just involved or victim of road rage,
right?
Sure. You go for a run after something like that and you may see 10 or 15 beats higher than you would typically find.
Yep.
It's also impacted by your fueling, how well you're fueled, how well you're hydrated, the amount of blood volume in your body, relatively speaking. If you're dehydrated, blood volume may be 10 to be a little bit lower. The amount of blood maybe a little bit more viscous. You may end up needing more heartbeats to push a certain amount of blood. I mean, there's a lot of factors that come into play, and it gets complex. The bottom line is it's a tool. You see a number. If it's out of the ordinary or typical for what you're used to, it at least gives you some feedback.
That's great information. Anything else you want to put on there?
Well, I would say, you know, as a general rule, Doc, I personally believe that when it comes to race day, we don't want to utilize our heart rate monitor, and that is simply because, and there may be some folks out there that are going, what do you mean? You know, that can be a good tool. But I found through many years of racing experience that because of adrenaline and an excitement and things like that, I always see higher heart rate numbers on race day. And that doesn't necessarily mean I have to go slower. But if I see a number that's out of the ordinary because of adrenaline or excitement, it can tend to mess with your mindset.
Right, sure.
You know, it can tend to throw you off your game a little bit and take you away from focusing on the task at hand.
Gets you right in the mind.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I want to just quickly throw out for the more for the athletes that are listening that are involved in long course racing for triathlon or who are cyclists is a topic called coupling, which is basically looking at the relationship of power or watts on the bike and heart rate. And this is something that can be very valuable in longer steady state aerobic type sessions where over a period of time, we want to see a consistent relationship between a heart rate number at an aerobic intensity and a power number at that same intensity. And if we see that relationship remain consistent, it's usually good affirmation that our fitness is in a good place or that we're improving. If we consistently see our heart rate rise, or dramatically so, while power remains the same or falls off, that's a good indication that we don't necessarily have a good, strong aerobic foundation. And that's something that we may want to address in our training. So we can use heart rate and how it relates to or couples with power to assess fitness. So again, it's one more tool. It's not an objective measure of work like power is, but used in combination with power or watts can tell us something about our fitness and something about our training. And I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, well, what about cardiac drift? Isn't that the same thing? Because really it isn't necessarily the same thing. As you know, with cardiac drift, that's basically sort of a physiological phenomenon, if you will, which is that heart rate will tend to rise over time in any kind of a longer aerobic exercise type session. That doesn't necessarily mean we need to slow down or stop, but it is something that we can be aware of and watch out for. So coupling of heart rate and power and cardiac drift are not necessarily one and the same, but they sometimes can look like it. Does that make sense?
It does. It cool does. Beans. It makes a lot of sense. I think that's a lot of good information. So basically you're saying that the pilot in the cockpit should look at all of his instruments, not just one.
Yeah, or the sailor.
Yeah.
The sailor's checking the wind, yeah, he's right, checking right. out whether the knots are tied.
Right.
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 Where's the current going?
That's
you know, I'm not a pilot
don't,
or
don't
a sailor.
Put the blinders on. Don't put the blinders on.
No.
It's a tool. It's one of the tools in your bag.
Yeah, you know, I've always said, and we can wrap up our talk now, but you know, I've always said that as you gain more experience as an athlete, similar to a sailor or a pilot, you begin to rely a little bit more on your intuition as you assess all of these tools, right? And of course, you always got to have the tools at least most of the time because you don't want to become too smart for your own good, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you're a pilot.
Right, right, right.
But the bottom line is ultimately your own understanding of your body is what you're relying on, and you gain that experience and that intuition through utilizing all these tools.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yep. Excellent. Right. That's some great information. I'm glad we had this opportunity.
Good
folks,
stuff.
As always, if you have questions or concerns, hit us up. Pursuit Athletic Performance, info@, you can find us there. Follow our blog. Check us out here on iTunes. And if you enjoyed this, please leave us a 5-star rating.
Excellent. Good chatting with you, brother.
Have a great day, Coach.
All right, you too.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete in you.